Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
All right, it's here. The day hath arrived. Cometh the hour, cometh the man, etc., etc.
You might be the only one who cares.
I don't think so.
Who else cares that you talk to?
Well, take a look at social media.
I'll choose not to, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I think people are a little...
They're getting ready to boo?
I don't know. I don't care what fans do.
You don't?
No. There's enough people in this city telling fans... They need to be louder. They got to do this. They got to do that. You pay your money to do what you want. I don't
there
give
you
a rat's
go.
Ass.
Absolutely.
I seriously don't.
I second
Just
that.
Don't throw stuff.
No.
You can do whatever you want.
There you go.
Cheer, boo.
Go have fun.
I don't care.
Whatever your fun is.
I mean, if it's me, I'd probably boo. But
How would that make you sleep better at night? Explain that to me.
It's not a matter of sleeping better at night. I go to a game to be entertained. And part of the entertainment is being able to vent. And if I want to boo, I'll freaking boo. Doesn't matter.
I despise that dude.
If I want to say nothing, I'll say nothing.
I guess. Maybe I just haven't went to enough games as a fan. Is he playing in them or working it?
Who cares? Like, people can do what they want.
I'm with you with that.
Like, seriously.
Do whatever you want. You buy your ticket.
Mark, why don't you just not worry about it?
That's a good, the voice of the...
That's the voice of reason.
416-413-3959 is a back leg line.
I miss that guy. You?
No. 416-413-3959 is the back leg line. We've got a busy show today. I want to get to the back leg line right away. We've got Pete Walker joining us, John Schneider, Stan Kasten, president, CEO, and part owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers will be along.
What if you had three Hall of Famers in your lineup? How cool would that be?
Because he does. Be pretty good.
And then Husker's hitting lots of homers.
Anyhow, so we have a lot to talk about. But as I said, I want to go to the back leg line, 416-413-3959. We didn't get a chance yesterday because of that crap show in Kansas City to do our post-game show on TV. So we didn't get a chance to get to the back leg line. But I am interested in particular. I want to know if you're going to the game tonight. Name and location, call up the back leg line, 416-413-3959, and maybe we'll check it later in the show as well. Just tell me, you're going to boo. How are you going to react to Shohei Ohtani? Now, how do you feel about Shohei Ohtani? You pissed off? You don't give a damn? Feel better if Vladdy was hitting? I mean, just...
I know I would.
So that's part of the deal is you know, putting it in context. The fact that the Jays' offense isn't doing a damn thing probably makes a lot of... folks.
Betts is hitting 374 with 6-21. Otani's hitting 358 with 6-16. Freeman's hitting over 300. I know he's only got a homer, but he's got 16 RBIs. Like, Teoscar's got six homers. Like, they're doing things offensively. I think that's sort of, right, the frustration part of if you want to boo excellence, go for it. Because that's what the Dodgers are giving you offensively. Well, they first in hits, they're second in runs. I think somewhat some fans were thinking Blue Jays should be close to that. Not saying first in either one of those, but close, you know, 10th or 12th, not 23rd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say hi from Kevo.
I was just sending our producer a message.
Oh, the booing.
416-413-3959. Go to the back leg line. We all set to go to the back leg line. You all set? You all keyed up?
I'm ready to go. Absolutely.
Ready to go?
Chris Bass is going to be good tonight.
Jay in Chatham, Ontario.
Just saw a tweet from Jeff following today's game, delayed as it was, in regards to Kirky and how you just can't hide him in this lineup. I can't help but think lately, among other things, you're watching Kirk at the plate. Barker's talked about how guys don't move around in the batter's box anymore. Boggles my mind. Why in the world, though, with arguably and seriously maybe the shortest arms in the league due to his stature, does he stand so far away from the plate? He's not covering the outer half, let alone the outer third, quarter, what have you. How is this a thing? How are there not improvements made? Boggles my mind. Thank you guys for what you do. At times, you're the only thing we've got to look forward to.
There you go.
All the best, guys.
I appreciate that.
I mean, we try. I try.
You know what? I don't know if there's a right answer to that. I think moving around the box is to each his own. It's very hard to do. It makes you feel very uncomfortable. I only did that when I was not feeling good, and that was sort of the last resort where, you know, and you just have tried everything else and sort of it's the point of contact. That's the whole point in moving around the box is I want to make contact in a different area, which would just give me a chance to maybe, you know, where I was fouling the breaking ball off. Now, if I'm a little closer, I catch it a little bit more before it breaks. Maybe I hit it a little harder in the air. Like, that's the whole point moving around. A lot of guys have trouble doing that. I think for me, when Kirky's good, he's really compact. Everything is super close to his body. For whatever reason, to me, and we're going to ask John when he comes on, to me, it looks like he's opening up more, flying the front hips a little bit more. And first move with the hands is not following the hip. It's moving hands away from the body. And everybody knows the further your hands get away, the weaker your swing looks. You can just close your eyes and picture the way his swing looks. It looks very windmillish, and it looks really slow, and it looks like it's dragging. Like, it just looks like it's from way back behind his body. That, for me, is starting with his lower half, right? Why is he opening up too soon? Is he trying to cheat? Is his bat feel slow? Is it conditioning? What is it? I don't know. I don't know if I know the answer to that. I just know what I see. And, you know, he seems to come up when he's playing in big spots like he did last night. What was his second inning? It was first and third. Fourth inning, it was first and third. Like, he's
18 or 19 runners left in scoring position or something like that.
They're having a tough time hiding him.
I mean, you can't. It's the same thing with Matt Chapman last year when Matt Chapman wasn't hitting. Listen, I guarantee you that there are people on that team. I mean, they're not going to come out and say we're trying to figure out where to put Alejandro Kirk so he doesn't come up in big situations, but they're looking at that. Like, you have to look at that.
Well, I'm sure front office, I'm sure coaches in front offices, players don't care.
I'm talking about the coaches in front office. They're trying to figure out a way to prevent this guy from, I don't know, where you hit him. There's I'm sure there are numbers.
There's quite a bit of dudes they're not hitting, so that's very individual right now. But I'm with you. I don't think they would care if everybody else or a lot of the other guys were hitting and doing their thing, but it's just sort of piling on when nobody else is really other than Kirky. I mean, other than Varsho, is really doing the thing that we thought they should be doing. So, you know, again, hopefully it's that's what you write. You got to find things. You just can't quit. Like, we were talking and I was listening to you talk when you were on the 590 yesterday talking to Show Ali. It's right now they just don't have a lot coming. You got what you got. It's just you can't quit. You got to figure out ways to get your hands closer to your body, have your bat be a little quicker, shorter the baseball, and look for something. He's getting good pitches to hit. He's not hitting them hard. So hopefully he can turn that around. They need to turn it around. Like, they're going to have to battle. 3.6 runs a game ain't going to do it.
They are 13-13 going into this three-game series.
They could get swept.
Against the Dodgers.
The Dodgers score a bunch of runs.
It's a lot to ask
the rotation to hold this Dodgers team to, say, 4 runs a game. It's a lot to ask.
Okay, you've got
a lot.
When you look at that top three, we'll talk to Pete Walker and John Schneider about this. When you look at that top three, a lot of times a team faces another team that's got a great hitter on it, the manager will say, well, the important thing to do is try to limit the damage the other guys can do around him. Try to hold him to a solo home run instead of 2 or 3. That's great when you only have Shohei Ohtani. Oh, how do you attack a lineup? And we haven't even mentioned the guy. We haven't even mentioned Will
Smith,
who's
Teoscar Hernandez.
Or Teoscar Hernandez. Man. So how do you approach that?
That's the million-dollar question.
Where's the weak spot?
Get ahead. Get ahead would be very important. And I'm sure Petey is telling whoever's pitching, you know, pitch ahead. You got a better chance when you're ahead to get somebody to chase something and get some weak contact. With Bassett tonight, we all know what he needs to do, right? It's the sinker cutter thing. Wherever he wants to locate that, his misses have to be on point.
And there's one pitch that Ohtani has had a lot of difficulty with this year, and that's the cutter.
A lot of people have that, right? But it's, again, can you locate it good enough?
Yeah.
that where, you know, if you need a swing and miss, you need some weak contact. Like, you got three of those. And Ohtani just seems like with that lower half, right, the stride separating and the way he just sort of pushes and everything is when he makes contact is something special.
What is it about him as a hitter? Like, you've seen him watch a lot.
Okay,
explain that to me.
Well, I mean, again, not a lot of people can stride separate. But when you're a giant human and you have tremendous leverage and you can rotate the hips the way he does, basically everything starts when his foot hits the ground. He is starting with the back hip, right? He wants to basically throw the back hip at the baseball, and everything will follow. And because he has bat speed, hand-eye coordination, leverage like nobody else in baseball, he can do the things at different quarters because you think you could throw him up because he's left-handed. He's got a natural little uppercut. He stops his momentum. Like, when people stop their momentum, Varsho, you would think, right, you can throw them up because now they'll have a little natural uppercut in their swing. They got a little hole up here. He starts laying off of that. He starts getting on top of that because he's on time with his lower. That's why he does it. It's repeatable. He can do it over and over and over again because he can make up for a bunch of things with all the ability that he has. Yeah, you better, like, you know, you got Mookie Betts doing things offensively that he might be the best player in baseball, Mookie Betts.
Yes.
I mean, I think yes. If somebody says that to you, you can't argue it.
No. If you asked me right now, the old story, pick a guy to start a team, he would be the guy.
Absolutely.
Gunnar Henderson to be number two, just because of his age. But yeah,
Mookie. Fernando Tatis Jr. can throw in there too.
Man,
things he does
him.
In right field. Trust him how? Like,
yeah.
He's a freak athlete. Like,
yeah,
trust him
he's,
how.
Yeah.
He's young. He's
yeah.
full of it. He wants to be one of the best players in baseball.
Yeah, like, he's also been suspended once.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, not everybody. Not everybody gets suspended. And they don't. You can't say everybody.
So you wouldn't want to start a team because a guy was wiping something on his butt. That's why you wouldn't want him on your team?
He wouldn't be my first five choices. No.
Wow. That's stiff.
No, he wouldn't. I'd rather Ronald Acuna Jr. than him.
I mean,
I might rather have Bryce Harper than
you.
Could, I mean,
you
I could,
couldn't go wrong with any of those.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be. He wouldn't be that.
Wouldn't
be
top
10
for you.
Tatis Jr. No. Soto would be. Judge would be. Ohtani would still be. No, he wouldn't be top 10.
There's some players in there.
He wouldn't be top 10. Corey from Burlington. See what Corey had to say.
Vladdy and Bo in general, I mean, whenever you guys are talking about them, specifically Blair, it's like it's already a foregone conclusion that they aren't being re-signed or extended in any way. I mean, I just don't understand why that's already been decided. You know, even at the end of next year, these guys are still going to be in mid-20s, maybe not even in their prime yet. We spent so long developing them, so much time and energy. I just don't know why, excuse me, in Blair's mind, that's already been decided. Would love to hear Barker's thoughts on that as well. All right, cheers, boys.
Yeah, I mean, because I haven't seen any evidence that anything's any steps have ever been taken.
We haven't heard it either.
No. Bo did sign that contract that covered off his arbitration years. Mm-hmm. When that happened, I thought, okay, well, that gives them a foundation to start talking about how much he's going to be paid into his free agent years. You know, is there a chance they could re-sign? I mean, I guess there's a chance Vladdy could re-sign because I can't think Vladdy's going to get the money that everybody thought he was going to get 3 years ago. But we haven't seen any evidence that there's any urgency on anybody's part to get it done. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I do. I also believe this: once those guys become free agents, I said yesterday, they're free agents at a really young age. There are going to be a lot of teams lining up for those two guys, especially Bo. And those are going to be teams in markets where they might be closer to winning.
Yeah, with the way the organization, too, was talking in the offseason, and then you take Vladdy to court fighting over $1.5 million,
yeah,
just
doesn't make it.
It does. Absolutely
doesn't
does.
That doesn't matter.
Absolutely
other
does.
Teams.
Absolutely
Ryan
does.
Howard went to arbitration with the Phillies.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't like it either. That happens.
It's business.
Okay. Well, again, were they talking about Ryan Howard carrying teams, and he's the only reason they're going to win a World Series?
Yeah, they were back in the day.
Oh, okay.
When he came up, yes.
Coming off a bad year, coming off a year that we didn't think he was very good, and then you're throwing it all on phone.
Yeah, Ryan Howard was a pretty big deal. Ryan Howard at one point, I think, had the highest arbitration award in baseball. Yeah, and they took him to arbitration.
Yeah, the conversations that I've had with Ryan, he almost wanted to do that. Like, it was a part of his.
That's what I'm saying. It's business.
Vladdy's never wanted to do
it's
that.
It's business. That's
the thing, right? Wow. It's Vladdy's wanted to be a part of the Blue Jays organization.
Here's the thing.
It's just how much.
What's
the number?
The thing is, when you go to arbitration and win, you feel good. When you go to arbitration and lose, you don't feel good. Vladdy won. I don't know what the hell he's upset about. He won. He beat them in arbitration.
Yeah, I think, again,
he beat him.
I think it's a lot.
After an off year,
maybe,
he beat him.
Maybe.
What's he got to be pissed off about? He got more money than they wanted to pay him.
Yeah, I wasn't in the room, but I'm sure it was about the conversations, who they're comparing him to, how they talk about him with his conditioning, what they say about his bat speed and defense. I'm sure all those things come into play.
I just think the whole arbitration thing is overdone. Every team in baseball, not every team, most teams in baseball are trial and file teams or file and trial teams, whatever it is.
It just gets back to the caller's point. If bad taste in your mouth, your player, maybe you want to move on. You want a different opportunity with a different team. Maybe now they don't want to sign here.
I have no idea, but you would think
if they really wanted them, they would have signed one of them anyway, right?
That's the other part of this decision. Now, maybe they're part of their processes or their thought process is, okay, if we sign one guy, what message does that send to the other guy?
You don't think Vladdy felt that when Bo got a 3-year deal?
Yeah.
Absolutely he did.
But
where am I at? Why didn't you sign me through a 3-year deal?
You know, the only reason I'm just so dismissive of it is because, as I said, we haven't seen any evidence, frankly, that either side wants to get it done. I mean, is there urgency from Bo's side? I don't know. Is there urgency from the Jay side? I think there should be with Bo. Is there urgency from Vladdy's? Vladdy seems, and his agents are telling people they'd like to get something done. But clearly,
and also, listening to Bo talk about his approach at the plate, what he's trying to do differently than he's tried to do in the last couple of years, he's trying to get paid. You think he's trying to hit some home runs here? He thinks that the market is asking him as a shortstop now to hit more home runs than he's been hitting. Leading the league in hits ain't going to do it anymore. So I think just listening to them out loud will tell you that it may happen, but why wouldn't it have happened already?
Yeah.
If you want to make them happy and see the best out of them.
And no, there is no, when a guy goes to free agency, there is no, there's no rule that says he won't re-sign, but there's just no evidence that that's going to happen in this case.
I know how you make me happy.
And again, with all due respect to Vladdy, if this is Vladdy.
Yeah, I don't even know what you'd offer him now. Where would it start? What's the number?
That what is he?
I think that's left to Doc. You?
I too.
I don't even know where you start.
No.
What would the years be? What's the number?
The number's probably easy to figure out just based on what he's getting paid right now. Looking at what he's getting paid right now, which was a number that his agent filed. So that was a representation of what his agent thought it was worth. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the other thing. That's a starting point. You've got evidence. This is what Vladdy's agent thinks he's worth. How come you haven't built off that if you really want to sign?
It's a great point.
I mean, I
maybe both sides don't want to.
It's not as if this ownership group hasn't. This ownership group has spent a ton of money. They spent a ton of money on the payroll. They spent a ton of money in the ballpark. I got to think if there was a real impetus to get this done, it would have gotten done by now.
Well said.
And as I said, in Vladdy's case, I'm not certain that they've misplayed their hand here. The only downside I see from this is it possible that Vladdy is really unhappy and that's manifesting itself in his performance? But you know what?
I'm sure it hasn't helped.
You got to know your player. The front office is, and if the front office...
Maybe they don't care.
If the front office thinks that they've got an unhappy player in their hands because he's not getting a long-term contract and they have no intention of giving him a long-term
Vladdy's
contract...
Vladdy's not awful. Would you be happy if you were Vladdy? No, you wouldn't. I can answer the question for you. No, you wouldn't.
No.
Like, you see your buddy getting 3 years. Why wouldn't you want to get 3 years?
Anyhow. Josh in Kelowna.
You know, I've been ruminating on this for a little bit. You know, looking at the season, looking at all the previous seasons, I think one thing seems to be clear, and I'm going to give Vladdy some empathy. I don't think he has the makeup to be an aircraft carrier, as, you know, Barker likes to say.
Yeah.
If he was on a team like the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Braves,
Padres,
you know, some other team where he is not the main guy, I actually think he would probably thrive, and we would probably see all that talent come through. But because, you know, he's only, what, 24, maybe 25 this year, and he's been supposedly the aircraft carrier ever since he got here, he had that one great year, but then, you know what, things get tough. Some years don't go as planned. And I think he will always be trying too hard as long as he's in Toronto and as long as he is supposed to be the guy. I just don't think mentally he is capable of being the guy to carry a whole team. And I think this management is banking on that. They're going to bank their careers that he does that. But we've seen now, in the sample size of, you know, 4 years, 5 years since he's been here, that he's just not the guy, except for the 1 year.
Well, I mean, I can't, it sounds like sort of the same thing we've been saying all along. You're not all along, but certainly this year, your point, it is possible that he is not a generational player. It is possible that he's just a very good player. A guy who has, you know, on a good team, I think the caller is onto something. There isn't, I'll say this, I don't think there's a good team in baseball that wouldn't put Vlad, that wouldn't take Vlad.
I'm with you. But it is very obvious that when Marcus Semien was here and Teoscar Hernandez was here and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. was here and he was lumped right in the middle of all those dudes, mm-hmm. and they were doing their thing. I mean, Marcus Semien hit 40 homers. Like, there's a lot going on there, right? And it was just sort of, Vladdy, you go up there and be just like that guy is. Don't go up there and be anything that, you know, mm-hmm. you're not, we don't want you to try and be. It's just amazing how sort of now the spotlight's only on him and really nobody else. That, to the caller's point, I mean, I don't think you could have said it any better.
No, and look, we all have some empathy for Vladdy because he's it drives me nuts when people talk about his body language and having fun and all this. I mean, mm-hmm. that is the way he is. But yep. when you talk to people around the team, nobody questions how much work he puts in.
Mm-mm.
Nobody questions.
I've seen it.
Nobody questions his intelligence.
Mm-mm.
You know, I keep reminding people to go back and look at everything that was said and written about him coming out of the minors. Worried about his weight. Can't play third base. What if he's just a
plays
DH?
Every day.
You know, he plays every day.
Yep.
Even when he's struggling, he plays.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Not the worst defensive first baseman. He's, frankly,
Way better than we thought he would be.
If people are honest yeah. with themselves, yeah. they would have to say that he's way better than we mm-hmm. thought he'd be.
Yeah.
But he hasn't lived up to the expectations that were set by that MVP caliber season. And that's... It sometimes happens. I don't think it's anybody's fault. It's not the media's fault. It's not the fans' fault. I think the front office maybe should have, you know, maybe got to realize what you have. I don't know if they put too much faith in Vladdy. I mean, the thing is, you know, there's a whole cottage industry of analytics people who will tell you that Vladdy's actually better than the product we're seeing on the field.
Mm-hmm.
That there are underlying numbers that suggest that he should be better. And I'm sure if those folks are able to see that, I'm sure the Blue Jays have people who are looking at that and saying the same thing, you know? And
I think it's the ball the other way in the minor league parks. That for me is where this stands out. The last couple years, a lot that hasn't been there. Like that's diminished a lot. It's letting it travel. It's hitting a line drive to right field that's an out at the Rogers Center now when that was a homer in 2021. That's the difference. And that builds energy at the plate. That builds confidence at the plate. That allows you to have better at-bats going forward. I mean, Dan Schoen's brought this point up about him getting a hit in the first at-bat and yep. sort of the way it looks after that. That's a big deal. I've lived that. Yep. Where you're trying so hard to fix it off the field, you think you fixed it, and your first at-bat looks like you've never hit a baseball before. Yeah.
Pete Walker is the pitching coach of the Toronto Blue Jays. He doesn't have much to worry about tonight.
Don't change a thing, buddy.
Pete Walker joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker.
Boy.
The Jays and the Dodgers will start a three-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. The Dodgers, well, of course, we know about the Dodgers lineup. The good news is we also know about the Blue Jays starting rotation.
Well said, buddy.
Which, once again, is shouldering a pretty significant load with this team.
Pitching coach should get a raise.
Well, I would not argue with that.
Nope.
Let's see if Pete Walker would argue with that. He joins us. You'd take a raise, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear what you guys were talking about. But I don't know. I'm not sure about that. But,
yeah.
Hey, honestly, though, we're pleased with where they're at right now. Obviously, Bassett, is in a good place, and Kikuchi and Barrios. But we're trying to get things in order as well. You know what I mean? On the pitching side, with little inconsistencies early on, but we're trying to get things rectified. And our bullpen's coming together now, and I think we're in a much better place from a pitching standpoint. How you guys doing?
Good, we're doing well.
Good.
You know, we didn't have to wait 3 hours and 38 minutes like you. Well, actually, we did, but we were in here.
Yeah, that was not great. That was not ideal by any stretch. I really couldn't believe we played through that. And then it was obviously disappointing to sit around that long and see the field and the condition it was in and not finish that. So that was ridiculous. But it is what it is, and we have to deal with it and get ready to play tonight.
So, Pete, I was thinking about this yesterday, and not just because you guys are facing the Dodgers tonight, but when your team is having a difficult time scoring runs, does that change the way your pitchers have to approach the other team?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I mean, I obviously, tight games they keep you locked in sometimes. So I think from a pitching standpoint, we're just trying to win each at bat, win each inning, and put us in a good position at the end of the game to win a ball game. So, obviously they're aware, the starting pitchers are aware, and the relievers are aware of the score. But, you know, they're going in, and their ultimate job is to get that hitter out, right, and to get out of any situation that they're in and make quality pitches. So we just continue to try to execute pitches to the best of our ability, and really there's certain things you can't control. Even when you make a good pitch, sometimes you make the right pitch, you execute it well, and they still put the bat on the ball and it falls in. So I think for us, it's just about consistency and getting back to that, you know, limiting our walks, which we didn't do a great job of early on in the season. But I think, you know, right now we've been better. We still need to get better at that. I think if we can do that, we can be, one of the better staffs in baseball for sure. And I think headed in that direction. I think, you know, we've lowered our walk rate. We're executing pitches for the most part. And I think we just, you know, we're going to keep us in the ballgame.
Before I ask you about Chris Bassett, I want to ask you about velocity. When do you start worrying about that from a staff?
I've said this even during spring training. I get a little frustrated sometimes when players get frustrated with where their velocity is. I mean, I think that, again, it's about making pitches. Whether you're missing a mile an hour or two, obviously the stuff helps, right? You can get away with a little bit more in the strike zone sometimes. But I'd prefer guys that concentrate on making pitches, execute the quality pitches, you know, not leaving the ball over the heart of the plate, because whether it's, you know, 90, 92 or 94, if it's in the middle, it's going to get hit. So, you know, I think for us, it's about strike one and it's about executing pitches. And I try to tell these guys all the time, and we do, we have a good group of guys, and in our pitcher meetings, it's about making pitches and pitching as opposed to throwing and just trying to outstuff, you know, overpower guys or outstuff guys right now. So I think we're doing a little bit better job of that as a staff. And I really want them to continue on that path is really just one pitch at a time, focusing on attacking the strike zone early, but making quality pitches late.
Okay. Two part question about Chris. Yeah. The first one is, how do you know when he's good this time of the year? And the second one is, what are you noticing with the pitch clock? I notice a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like he's fighting that, right? It's sort of, when do you use it? How much do you use it? How do you use it? What are you seeing? What's the challenges with the, you know, the clock being where it's at? You know, it doesn't have the extra 2 seconds. That looks like that's, I don't want to say bothered him, but made him think about it. He's already got a lot to think about. What are you seeing from that? And what do you notice when he's really good?
Yeah, I think there's something to that, the loss of 2 seconds with the guys on base. I think it took a little while because, you know, for Chris especially, he used to look up and, you know, would be around 9 or 10, and now it's at, you know, obviously 7 or 8. And it seems like the clock ticks a little bit quicker because of that with runners on base. And he definitely, that was one area that he had to get used to after the first couple of games, and I think he's done a good job of that because he does like to manipulate the clock a little bit and play with it. But felt like a few instances he was running out of time. So I think he's made a good adjustment with it. He's one of those guys. It doesn't take him very long to make adjustments. You know, whether it's results in a game from game to game or pitch execution or maybe even fine tuning a particular pitch. He's not afraid to make adjustments and to better himself. So he found a way to do it. We talked about it. We've done some things to kind of help us in those situations. Without getting into specific details, but he's doing a better job with it. And, you know, the clock, for the most part, hasn't been a factor with us, to be honest with you. I think most of the guys are working at a good pace. They've gotten used to it. If we need to use our disengagements, I give them, you know, carte blanche, you know, step off, throw over, do whatever you got to do to give yourself a little extra time.
Yeah, Kevin Gausman's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start just with velocity. You talk about that velocity. And I heard him the other day after his last start talk about timing. Can you explain that to us, what timing means?
Yeah, he got just a hair out of whack, to be honest with you. And I think we've kind of figured out what it is and just going to hammer it out. It happens sometimes with deliveries, especially with Goss, you know, having kind of a crazy spring training and just seemed to be a little bit off initially. So we figured a couple of things out. We're going to work on it. But there's a lot of season left, and his arm feels great. So it's really just a matter of getting him back on track, getting his delivery, getting his timing down. And you'll see the same old Goss hopefully this next outing.
You know, Pete, whenever a team comes into town and they've got a great hitter, you often hear a manager say, well, the whole key tonight is we got to limit the home runs to solo home runs. We got to make sure there's no traffic when ... comes up. I mean, I don't have to tell you tonight, ... coming up all the time, right? Because you got Betts, Otani. You're going to have some dots. They're going to be dots, all right. I mean, Betts, Otani, Freeman, Teoscar, well, all these guys.
Yeah.
Is it different pitching to a lineup that is so deep? You know, like, how do you attack a team like that?
Obviously they got a really good team, and you know, in the major leagues, though, believe it or not, we talk about individual players, but there's always a game plan, and we go through each hitter, and so we're gonna attack guys certain ways. But they do have a deep lineup, you know, and the top of their lineups, probably the best in baseball, you know. So you got to be good, and you got to really control the bottom part of the order. You got to make your pitches to those guys. You can't give in. And, you know, you also can't give them too much credit, because if you give them too much credit, then all of a sudden you got 2 or 3 walks in a row and you've loaded the bases. So you do have to be, I think, with our staff, we know who we are. We have good pitchers, and we need to trust our stuff. We need to attack these guys to our best ability and to our strengths. And, you know, for the most part, you know, if we can limit their bases, their total bases in the series, will give us a good chance to win, you know, the top part of that order. Petey, so, you know, we'll take a single. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, that's I don't want to cut you off there. I was just wondering. So against really good lineups, it's not so much you pitch into a weakness. It's you staying with your strengths. That's what you're preaching.
Yeah, it for the most part. I mean, obviously, if there's something that's glaring with a really good hitter, you may attack it. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. But for the most part, I want our guys to pitch their game. And if there's a certain area that doesn't match up well at all, then we might make an adjustment. But for the most part, our guys are going to pitch, and they're going to try to get strike one, and they're going to execute. So that's what we're hoping for tonight. You know, but obviously, it's a really good team. A really good lineup. We have to be good, and we have to believe in our stuff, and hopefully we keep him off the scoreboard.
Speaking of stuff, Yariel Rodriguez has tremendous stuff. It's just pitches per inning.
Yeah.
Is there one thing that stands out to you? I know it's arm angles and you know the start and stop and the momentum kind of thing and the quality of the location.
Yeah.
You know, how do you or when do you? Maybe that's the most important question. When do you sort of step in and go, okay, we've seen this sample size. Can we make this adjustment? When do you start having that conversation?
Yeah, I think those conversations have already started. I think, you know, with him, obviously he's got tremendous stuff. He really, to be honest with you, we've had, you know, I'm not making excuses, but we've had a little bit of a bug run through this team. And the last time through the rotation, I think every starter was pretty sick. So that's just the way it goes sometimes in baseball. But Yariel's fighting the bug. So his last outing, he was definitely under the weather and battled. But for him, his stuff is obviously plus stuff. He's got great fastball, good breaking stuff. You know, he's got the split. He's got the different angles. So as we're watching him pitch, we're obviously, you know, assessing certain things and looking at the results and trying to make sure the pitches make sense. But for him right now, we're still letting him do his thing for the most part. We've made a couple of adjustments already with his pitch arsenal and his usage. But for the most part, we're still giving him some freedom to kind of see what he can do. And you know, he's also building up again. So he's building up pitch count, building up innings. He's kind of in uncharted territory to where he's been. So we'll be watching that as well.
Yeah, he made an interesting comment. I think it was an interview with Shy, and he talked about how as a reliever, he didn't have to throw all the pitches he has. Is there a noticeable separation, Pete, in terms of the quality of the pitches he wasn't using as a reliever, you know, where they are now compared to the pitches he was using as a reliever?
You know what? Not really. His stuff hasn't fallen off really at all. When we're looking as he gets into the game and that pitch count starts going up a little bit, he's maintaining his velocity. I know last game was off because of, honestly, between the weather and how he was feeling. But the game before that, he maintained his velocity really well. The spin on his break and stuff was sharp throughout. So we haven't seen anything different so far, which is a great sign. That usually means that, you know, we feel that he could be a starter for us long term for sure. And that's a good sign. But right now, no, he can use all his pitches as a starter, and we're happy with where he's at.
Petey, Blair mentioned the pen, and the first guy that popped in my mind was Eric Swanson. And I just wanted to ask, whenever you see him throwing his split finger, is there one specific thing that you look for that tells you that thing is going to go where he wants it to go?
You know, he's always thrown a split differently than some guys. Some guys really like to take it, strike the ball. He's always kind of just let it rip in the zone. So I think when you see more guys swing and miss in the zone, you know, you're getting the movement that you're looking for. His velocity is just about where it was last year. I think it's really just him getting comfortable in his delivery right now. When you see him kind of dotting up his fastball and getting that slider to the outer edge, his glove side, away to righties. I think that's when you start to see him become really sharp, and then that split plays off of those two pitches even better. So for him, it's a little bit of a different approach. You know, obviously get some swing and miss and weak contact in the zone, but he's never been one to try to throw that split, strike the ball. He's gonna throw it in the zone and make you swing at it and get yourself out.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Last one before we let you go. You say Kikuchi. Yep, well, why has the curveball been so good?
You know, I think early on, the end of spring, we kind of lost the feel for we got in between the curveball and the slider, and he's kind of regrouped during the season and got a good feel for that pitch. It keeps him off balance. He doesn't have to rely as much on the slider. It comes out kind of looking like a slider, but it has more down action, obviously more depth to it, and with less speed. And he's able to drop that in for strikes. He's been able to use it late in the count to put a guy away, and it just makes his slider that much more effective when he does throw it. And the one thing with Cooch this year, you see him, and he's shaking through his fastball more, mm-hmm. so which is a great thing. His confidence is probably at an all-time high. He's using his fastball more, so the hitters can't sit on particular pitches in certain counts. And right now, he's in a great place, I don't see that changing.
Awesome.
Pete, really good of you to do this as always. You know, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Kick butt, buddy.
You got it.
See ya.
Take care, man.
Take care.
Pete Walker, pitching coach of the Toronto Blue Jays. I love that. That's that last comment about Yusei Kikuchi shaking to his fastball more.
Absolutely.
Showing he's more
it's a good one.
Confident.
I told you, when he first got here and he's having that bad year, and I ask you, where's the velocity at? Is that at?
Because yes,
when he's got that, you just don't see dudes that are left-handed throw that hard consistently.
You know, we talk about...
Every once in a while, they'll hit it. But when he's got it, like Petey said, it's nasty stuff.
You know, when we talk about Vladdy and Bo and contracts and that, I'll tell you what, man. Based on the amount of time and energy they've put into Yusei Kikuchi, and based on what I've seen right now.
Yeah, he loves it here, too. His family loves it here. He loves Pete Walker.
He's up here in the offseason.
Like everything's sort of falling in place for him. He's very comfortable. I think he's a guy that needs to be comfortable to see the best out of him. And what they've done, you know, if you've noticed listening to Petey talk, he's not going to overwhelm them. It will be just little things like, why don't you try this little thing from start to start? And then it's just sort of a build up to, you know, what he wants to ultimately that person end up being. And, you know, you see the confidence he's walking around. It's just don't have your hands high, have them low. That eliminates a movement. Now you can repeat that. You're going to throw harder. The extension's better. The breaking ball's going to be better because your misses are going to be down. I mean, he's pitching down with power. And then you could tunnel that little slow breaking ball, and the separation's now like 14 or 15 miles an hour.
It's interesting.
It's elite stuff.
The hitters will tell you how good you are.
No question.
And
fastball counts. He's giving it to them, and they can't hit it. That's something special.
And watching... And I've noticed that maybe this started to happen in the second half of last year, and I just didn't notice it, and I am noticing it this year. He gets some of the reactions he gets from hitters.
Yeah.
From opposing hitters. First of all, there's always that. They're always checking the velo was on the scoreboard.
Yeah. Why am I late?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's something. It's everything rolled into one, right? It was when they signed him, I think this was the outcome. They knew he had some ups and downs because all the stuff. Like, it's again, we talk about Vladdy, and I do especially. It's just too much stuff. You just can't repeat that. The dudes you're facing are just too good. You say basically said to himself, and Petey was trying to relay the message, it's just too much. How do you simplify it enough to where you can catch it out front? Everything looks the same. It's free and easy. It's repeatable. And now you got three different pitches, and you can even eliminate one. He's eliminated the changeup because he doesn't need it. I think that's why you eliminate it is, I don't need to be a four-pitch guy. I can be a three-pitch guy if I'm locating with high-octane velocity on corners, and now I'm missing down because everything that I was doing is simplified. It's out front, and I'm spinning it, and I'm just breaking it off, and it's going where I want it to go. It's elite stuff. I just wonder what he's worth. That's the thing, right? And where's this team at? Say this team doesn't make the playoffs. You re-signing him?
I mean, I need pitching. I don't – and. You know, we'll ask John Schneider this, but where's the pitching in the minors? It seems to be hurt. I need pitching. I can't. If I don't re-sign Yusei Kikuchi, I'm going to be looking for Yusei Kikuchi in the free agent market. That's the way I would look at it.
You've got to tell you, if they finish under 500, don't make the playoffs, what are they doing? Rebuild's a nasty word.
I don't think
in the East.
I don't think they'll rebuild. It all gets back to Vladdy and Bo.
Under 500, you think one of them's being traded? That's the question, right?
You know what?
You almost have to, right? Yeah, I mean,
based on the way
you can't sell a message anymore, right? I don't think you could do it. You
know, based on the way things have happened with this front office, I just don't know. I mean, I know what I would do. I think I know what other teams would do. I don't know if this organization would do the same thing. I just don't know.
If you keep it and you roll it back, what's your message?
Yeah.
Can't be the core anymore.
Yeah.
Can't be they're coming back to their numbers like you're – And now, listen, they got good enough pitching, and they got really good defense, and that's going to keep them in this thing.
What I'm saying is
not going to be fun to watch, but they'll keep them in.
If I'm not – now, I haven't checked this. I believe going into the regular season, the Jays' rotation was the highest-paid rotation in baseball. Pretty damn close to the highest-paid rotation in baseball. I don't know – where the cheap, cost-effective guy is in the minors. You know, Ricky Tiedemann. We don't know what the results of Ricky Tiedemann's
Manoa's
exam were. Manoa. Who the hell knows? It would be great. It would be great if he could come back, because there's your guy that might be good for
cheap. Well, it sounded like this last start in the minor leagues was sort of... If you do it, we're going to adjust and try and get you back up here. Now it's like, do you do now? It's almost like you got to leave him in the minors.
You almost got the sense that it was all the steps forward he took, that was a big step back.
Yep.
So, Brent, I don't know where the I don't know where's that cheap sort of guy I can have control of for 3 years who's going to give me 180 innings. Where is that guy? If I don't have that guy. I could trade for him, or I could sign a free agent starting pitcher, or I could re-up guy I already have.
They got to figure out their lineup.
If it's me, I do whatever I can to keep Kikuchi here, and know that regardless of what I've got coming up, I'm going to have Bassett, Gausman, Berríos, Kikuchi. But this gets to, we had a call yesterday say, okay, why don't the Jays just, why don't they trade to shake this up? And then you get to, what do you have to trade? Right?
Yeah.
Do you trade one of your starting pitchers?
You need them.
I mean, you're not getting anything for George Springer.
Nope.
Calvin Biggio, the guys on the edges, you get something for
Vladdy, but I don't think you get what everybody wants to get.
No, people have this idea that if you trade, that Vladdy is like Juan Soto was when the Nationals traded. No, I'm sorry, he's not. You're not going to get some organization's three best prospects, especially considering that he's just got another year of service time before free agency. But it is. I would love to have the conversation with Kikuchi. I really would.
I would have had it already.
I got a guy who's happy and successful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If I've got a guy.
He looks like he's trending up too.
If I've got.
More, better.
If I've got a Japanese pitcher who's happy and successful, seeing how much success teams are having in that market in Japan in bringing guys over here, boy, I could do worse than having a guy who can call up, hey, I love it here. Look, these guys saved my career. I was at a loss in Seattle. I came here.
Yep.
And I think there's a value in that.
I'm with you.
But, it's a different time in baseball. You know, one of the things that analytics has done, and I think probably to the betterment of the game, is it's prevented people from making irrational, emotional decisions mm-hmm. about players.
Yeah.
You just don't see those decisions made anymore. And I think most organizations have a pretty good handle on what their guys really are. So how we judge players has changed. And I honestly think that different organizations judge different players in a different manner. They value different things in different players. And I think for a lot of us to sit here and try to do fantasy trades, again, it doesn't matter where player A is ranked in Baseball America's top 100 rankings. If I'm making the trade and our guys don't like the guy, I don't care.
Yep.
It's, and that's kind of, like I said, I think it works to the betterment of the game. I think more knowledge and a better read in your players is a good thing. But you haven't said that, I'd sign you, say Kikuchi.
Me, absolutely, me too. That left-handed don't come around every day.
Nope. John Schneider's the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He will join us. And Stan Kasten, president and CEO of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Every week, and I'm not kidding, every week the Dodgers announce another promotional agreement, another signing with the Japanese business, the corporation. It is remarkable the impact Shohei Ohtani's had. Stan Kasten will join us to talk about that. John Schneider as well. It's Blair and Barker for Friday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight from the Rogers Center. The Blue Jays and the Los Angeles Dodgers, the first of a three-game series. John Schneider, the manager of the Blue Jays, joined us in a few minutes, but we're going to give away some tickets right now. We've been giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here on Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Now, our last trivia question and answer was, this four-time All-Star and Gold Glove winner bookended his career with the Dodgers, but also played four seasons in Toronto. The answer was Russell Martin.
Russell Martin.
Russell Martin. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Royals at the Rogers Center on Monday, April 29th and Tuesday, April 30th. Royals fan Caleb Humphreys, you remember him, kind of the Amish-looking dude.
Yep.
That's what it says in my paper. He caught a controversial home run off the bat of which Royals player in the 2015 ALCS? Again, Caleb Humphreys, big guy, beard, slightly unkempt. If he sat down next to you in a bar, you'd get up and leave. That guy I'm talking about. He caught a controversial home run.
I'd leave if you said
so. Off the bat of which Royals player in the 2015 ALCS? Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590.
If you didn't read the answer, you'd know who that was?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's bring in John Schneider. He is manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. John, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us today. Before we move on to the Dodgers, I wanted to ask you about yesterday, but from a different perspective, because I think there's a misconception about how decisions regarding rain delays are made. And just so we're clear, you had nothing to do with it, did you? Like, you had nothing to do with, oh, we got to play this game because, you know, we need the win. You had nothing to do with that.
No, it's MLB and the umpires. You know, obviously, with the score being 2-1, yeah, we wanted to play.
Right.
We wanted to play. The last thing you want to do is run guys out there and get them hurt. You know, if it's unplayable, it's unplayable. But, yeah, we're at the mercy of really the league and the umpires at that point.
And even the Royals, they don't have a great say other than providing information about weather and things like that. Correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, we were. I mean, myself and Matt and the umpires, you're in touch with MLB. Felt like we had 8 or 9 forecasts that they were giving us, and we're kind of following protocol. You know, it's a weird thing, and yeah, they were ready to play if the field was deemed playable. So it's. It's a weird thing. There's a lot of boxes to check as you're going through it.
Yeah. All right. We'll move on to tonight's game against the Dodgers. You know, whenever a team comes into town, or whenever a team faces another team that has a great hitter on it, a lot of times managers will say, well, the key is to limit the damage that other guys are doing, right? If he's going to hit a home run, it's going to be a solo home run. That might work with some teams. I'm not certain how the hell you limit damage in this lineup. What is the approach to facing a lineup that runs, you know, 5 or 6 deep?
Yeah, that's a tough lineup, obviously, top three especially. But, you know, you try to – I mean, I think you try to limit damage. You try to pitch to weak contact. These dudes are, they're tough to strike out. You know, they got really good control of the zone. Against really good hitters, I think it's pitching a weak contact. You know, if they're built to hit homers and score a lot of runs, you know, so you gotta take your outs when you can get them. You definitely not lose focus of the guys that are hitting below the top three, but you're pitching to weak contact. But yeah, they're tough. They're as tough as they get.
John, Alejandro Kirk is 8 for his last 46, a 174 average. What are you seeing with him?
Yeah, it's been a tough go for Kirky. I think, you know, expanded the zone a little bit more than he has in the past for sure. And not squaring up his pitches. You know, that happens with hitters. You know, he's so good behind the plate. But we got to get him going offensively to lengthen out this lineup. You know what I mean? So I think it's a combination of what makes him good is his control of the zone. And that's not as tight as it has been. And then within that, not squaring up his pitch when he does get it.
You think it's mechanical? Because, you know, I think you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think when he's going good, he's compact. Everything's close to his body. Hands are, you know, he's like most people, but especially with his body type and what he's trying to do to balls, you know, his hands got to be really close to his body. Just looks like sort of that hand's getting away a little bit earlier, staying there a little bit longer. How do you fix that? Like, that's – you got to play, I think, and, you know, the more you play, the more at-bats you get would help. But how do you fix that if you're Alejandro Kirk?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for him, obviously, or speak for G or Donnie, but it's you got to work. You got to work at it, you know, whether that's more reps off of machine and get that feel, that game-like feel. But you hit the nail on the head. He's good when he's compact, you know, and he can handle the ball in close to him really well. So you got to look for pitches there, for one. And, you know, I think to me, it always comes down to what you're swinging at. You know, and I think if he's swinging at pitches where he can handle, it's a different story. You know, that could be said about anybody, but you got to work at it. You know what I mean? And if it ain't working, you got to try something a little different.
John, I'm sure you get asked this by the reporters on a daily basis, but when it comes to the lineup, do you have a time frame or a set number of at-bats or just a general sense on when you get to the point where you say, okay, I've got to start doing something different with the top four guys or the top three guys?
Not a definite number, no. It's not like, okay, we're going to...
It's not like 90 this. And we make a change, right?
Right. It's not like, okay, 150 bats are here, we're going to do something different.
Right.
I mean, I think what, you know, you have to just really, you know, you look and you say, okay, well, for one, it's... I don't think it's time to do anything right now. You know, anything drastic. You know, I think that what you do is you say, okay, what am I doing to get ready? And if that's not working, maybe, you know, do we have to try something different to get ready? Again, these guys have always hit, and we kind of get where they're at. But I don't think that it's time to do anything drastic. These guys play a lot. I think, you know, off days here and there will definitely help those guys too. And, you know, if there does get to a point, there's no magic number where you got to move some guys around, you do it. And performance definitely matters at this level. So I think there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes to say, okay, let's see if we can do something different to get ready. And then if the results are still the same, you know, then you start looking about, okay, maybe we need to move some things around.
Is it kind of frustrating? Because look, I got to think you guys have a better idea than any of us what's under the hood. Right? I mean, you just do. And is it kind of, do you almost wish it sometimes you could say, guys, this is what we're seeing, right? These are the state secrets. I'm giving you the freaking state secrets so you'll stop asking me about this.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. If we were, I mean, not pleased with what was going on, we would change something. You know what I mean? So it's, we do see a lot more than the average person, obviously. And, you know, I think our job is to try to put guys in the right spots. And, you know, there's still a huge amount of trust and confidence in our lineup. So it's not like we get frustration from the outside. Sure. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you just got to go out and you got to get the big hit. You got to have the good at bat. And we know that those guys can do that. So the fact that we are where we are now, and I think not really firing on all cylinders to be, you know, obvious, you know, is encouraging. But you need it to start clicking pretty soon.
John, do you think Vladdy needs to make a lower half mechanical change? And what I mean by that, you know Vladdy better than anybody because you've been around him longer and you've seen him at his best. And, you know, we always try and go back to 2021 and, you know, we want that crystal ball to where we can just sort of lift him up from 2021 and put him in 2024. And he's just going to be that Vladdy all over again. But the pitchers he's facing are really, really good. The only question that I would have is, you know, it is the era of you got to beat the dude to the spot. They throw so hard that, you know, when he's good, that barrel is out in front of that front leg. It just is. And consistently the last year and a half or so, you know, he's been in between for whatever reason. And I'm in that camp of sometimes, you know, you don't want to make a change. Sometimes you have to make a change just to make it look different, and you want to show up every day and have something to build off of. It's not the where you're hearing him say, we're just going to continue to work. Well, I would ask, work on what? Like, it's, you know, what you're doing is just sort of look to me like it just ain't working consistently to where you're just beating that dude to the spot, right? The hand is going by the face. I got to get the barrel out front. Do you think it's to the point where he needs to make an obvious mechanical change with the lower half?
That was a long question.
It was. I'm sorry, but I had to try and explain myself because it is.
Yeah,
right. We talk about him a lot, so I wanted to add a little context to it.
I mean, I talk about under the hood. I mean, Vladdy's made some mechanical changes. He worked really hard in the offseason to try to clean some things up. I don't think his lower body. I mean, you guys can see it. I think when guys are real quick to the plate with the toe tap, he gets caught in between a little bit, but I don't think so. You know, I don't think it's a lower body, mechanical change. You know, with Vladdy and knowing him for as long as I've known him, he keeps it very simple. You know, he wants to feel rhythm with his feet. And when he's great, he knows he catches the ball out front, like exactly like you said. So, I think the work that he put in with his actual swing path is what we're focused on right now. And then it really comes down to, like you said, beating guys to spots. If he's going to be pitched in, you know, it's either let me beat you in there or not offer at it, you know. But Vladdy, I mean, he's been hitting this way for his whole life. You know what I mean? So I don't think by any means there's reason for him to change anything mechanically. You know, it's just the constant back and forth with pitchers. And again, it's work that people, you know, didn't really that don't see every day or didn't see in the entire offseason is what we're focused on, what he's focused on.
Moving him down the order wouldn't help. Like, you know, putting him in, say, the 5 or 6 hole wouldn't take a little pressure off to where he's just thinking, see ball, hit ball.
No, I don't think so right now. No. Okay. I mean, it's when he's good. Yeah. It's see ball, hit ball. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And you understand that, you know, teams are game planning around the top of our order. You know, it's just, that's how every team does it. So, it comes down to what you're going to do in response to that, really. So it's, it doesn't matter where he's hitting. He's going to be pitched the same way. You know what I mean? He's going to be pitched the same way. So it's, when it does click, he's exactly where we want him to be.
Okay.
John, a couple of sort of housekeeping questions. What's the next step for Alex Manoah? And have you guys heard anything further on Ricky Tiedemann?
Yeah, Alex is actually here. He's going to throw his side up here and then do another start in Buffalo on Tuesday, I believe. And with Rick, it's kind of more of the same. He's, you know, there's no new imaging planned. There's no second opinions planned or anything mm-hmm. like that. You know, kind of just resting right now and hoping to ramp back up pretty soon.
John, how do you want to use Barger?
How do we want to use him?
Yeah. Like every day gets righties, that kind of thing. You okay playing him in left a little bit more? How do you want to use him?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting him in against righties for sure and hopefully utilizing some of his power, you know, his ability to drive runs in. Totally understand left field is new for him. You know, we knew that when we called him up. You know, that was part of it. And he'll play other spots too, I think. It's just, you know, it's unique that we have guys that, you know, are good infielders that you don't want to flip in the outfield. You know what I mean? So I know the first ball that went to him was a little tough, and then he made a nice play against the wall and made the other routine plays. So confident enough that he's athletic enough to be fine out there, but we're looking for him to, you know, impact the baseball, especially against right-handed pitching.
Mm-hmm. Where's he made the biggest stride since last year? Actually, since last spring training, because he was kind of an intriguing guy last spring as well. What strides has he made?
Yeah, I think he's kind of learned how to hit a little bit. You know, you look at the swing, and it's a big swing, and I think that he wants to do damage. He wants to hit home runs. I think last year kind of taught him how to control the zone a little bit better, and that's kind of where he got to this spring. And you know, understanding he doesn't have to sell out for power. You know, it's gonna come because he's a strong guy. So I think going through what he went through last year, you know, he was hurt obviously a little bit, but I think understanding how to control the zone and still be able to hit the ball hard has gotten him to where he was in spring training and obviously what he was doing in Buffalo to start the year.
John, I talked to Bo at the field, and Bo was telling me in some counts he's getting a little frisky, like he wants to get the head out and do some damage to the pull side. You know, do you like when he says that? I don't know if you've heard that or not, but that's sort of what he said to me. And, you know, when you watch him in certain counts, 2-1, 2-0, like those counts that he can really sort of zone in, look in a certain window that he can get the foot down a little sooner. Are you seeing that? Would you like him to try and do that? Is he, you know, he's 6 for his last 28, which is not really a big deal. It's this early in the season, but when a lot of guys are not hitting. Do you like what you see from him so far?
Yeah, I mean, Bo's at his best when he's taking good aggressive swings. And I think just when he's getting pitches that he can really handle, that's when he's elite. You know what I mean? So I think it's him understanding how he's being pitched a little bit, you know, as he gets older. And I think being around JT a little bit and talking hitting, you know, there's going to be times where guys are going to come in because you can handle, you know, inside outing a ball to right field. And yeah, you can take a shot, but I want Bo to be up there to hit the ball hard, and I want him to get, you know, his good aggressive swings off before two strikes, and then use his two strike approach really. So I don't know about steering it per se pull side, but I think we've seen Bo long enough when he is taking really good aggressive swings on pitches in the zone. That's when he's obviously at his best.
Absolutely.
John, we're going to let you run as always. We appreciate your time. Go get him tonight.
Yeah,
thank you
luck,
for this.
Buddy. Good luck for that.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
See you later.
Take care. It's John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays. 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight against the Dodgers.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack when it comes to the certain guys in the order, right? And what do you do, and how do you do it, and how, you know, how long the leash is. And
well, John's right. You asked me the question. You ask anytime anybody calls up and says, "Well, they got to do something different with the lineup." You go, "Okay, what would you do?"
Yeah,
and I just don't have any answer.
See, I don't agree with John about the approach with the lower half of Vladdy. I could not disagree more. I think there's a big enough sample size that just on time, you know, with where his hand, basically what that is a lot of people talk steep bat path, which means the barrel is going by your face instead of under your face. Under your face means I have more room for error. Barrel is in the zone longer. When
right.
It goes by my face, the barrel's the last thing you see,
yeah.
Which is big time meaning that the point of contact really has to be out front. If it's a tick late, you're either swinging through it or you're fouling it off. Or you got lean back, rolling over, alligator arming it to the pool side. Who's that look like? So for me, this is just me. There's a big enough sample size. Not saying you're married to it, but I'm saying occasionally you do something, whether it's a quicker toe tap. What he does is a gather. That's not a toe tap. A toe tap's a quick thing. I'm gonna tap it to get my foot down on time to sort of eliminate it to where everything's working the way it's supposed to be working in the direction it's supposed to be working in.
But
eliminate a little of that. Just get it down sooner to where you can actually make contact out front. That's all.
Okay, but this is kind of gets back to what we've been talking about. It seems like all year. If he doesn't want to make that change, it doesn't matter. And John, this gets back to something Donald Fear, of all people, told me about professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it holds true. Guys, all professional athletes get to where they are by doing the same thing. It's really hard when you're when you've gotten to the point where you're getting $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's awfully hard to say, okay, you know what? Now you got to change it. I don't think every athlete necessarily buys into that the way the rest of us buy into it, because we're talking about vast sums of money. Yep. And we're talking about different things. Like if somebody says to, you know, any of us, you got to do this differently. You go, okay, well, yeah, we'll try it. But when you're talking about people making that much money,
yeah,
human nature's got to be, well, hang on for a minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did hit, hey, you say, Vladdy did not have the worst year in the history of baseball last year. And Vladdy's sitting there saying, well, hang on now. I mean, I did hit, you know, I did drive in 90 runs last year, and I did do this, and...
Well, this is where you got to be a good salesman, and also you got to be realistic, right? You go to him and you say 2021, you hit 26 home runs and 366 off the fastball. Since then, you've hit 18 and 290, 12 and 270. Yes. This year, you got two homers and hitting 296.
Can't argue that.
It's proof's in the pudding. Like, it ain't, look, you want to make Tatis Jr. money, you got to hit the heater. Like dudes that are getting big time money. Like that's the thing, right? I said this is why my question was long winded.
No, I know,
because I wanted to get the point out that what you're doing with your lower half don't make sense to beat the dude to the spot. There's enough of a sample size here that will tell you that it ain't happening. That you're more in between and not beating them to the spot than you are beating them to the spot. I will never argue how much talent he has. People can do what and say what they want. I've seen it up close and personal. Ball sounds different, goes where most people don't, balls don't go. But it's just the consistency of that. How do you get it back to, I'm not saying you marry it forever, but I'm saying occasionally, every once in a while, you have to have a friend walk up and just tap a guy on the back and go, numbers don't lie. Khakis can rhyme off all this hard hit percentage till they're purple. All I got to do is go, you've hit this many homers off the fastball this year, and the last couple of years, you haven't. Why? Maybe what you're doing with your lower half ain't working. Maybe because people that understand hitting who aren't as good at it as you are have seen that trying to disrupt your timing with hold the ball, quick pitch, even John said it, slide step, and gathers quicker, playing catch up, barrels moving. He ain't catching it out front because of the path. The path is what makes Vladdy special. That's how he could hit 330, is because of the path, right? It's level. He could cover more quadrants, but you got to be on time. You got to be making contact in a certain spot. That means your lower half has to be simple. And I brought back that Yusei Kikuchi and Barrios thing, how they've simplified. Not all that stuff, because I can't repeat it. I've been around forever, Barrios has. He fakes the ball every 5 days, but you just can't repeat that. And I'm getting hammered. Lefties are just wearing me out because I can't throw it where I want to throw it, or I'm having trouble throwing it there. I want to eliminate that. I want to give myself a better chance because I'm a really good athlete and I can do that. That's all. He's oozing talent, man. It's just that part where do it a little bit. And in season's very hard to do that. It is very hard in season to walk up to a guy that has hit some homers and, like you said, have been paid a little. But I'm asking, you want to get paid a lot or a little?
Yeah. And we also, I really wanted to sort of clarify how yesterday happened, because I think it's important that people realize that the teams have no...
Had nothing to do
have
with
nothing
John.
To do with
John wanted to play.
No, but neither did the Royals.
Yeah. That,
it's a call by the umpires.
Yeah.
And Major League
Sounds
Baseball.
Sounds like they got it wrong.
All the home team does is their grounds crew does what the umpires tell them to do. They provide the weather info, because I'm sure Kansas City wasn't upset. I'm sure mm-hmm. the Jays were upset. If you had to ask which of the two teams were happier, well, it would be the team that was winning. But I think it's important people realize the way those decisions are made. And
in the postseason, it's all baseball's call, too.
Yeah.
Postseason. We talked about the Rogers Center, the roof open, closed in the postseason. That is the call of Major League Baseball. So it's just important people.
Yeah, you're,
and there are considerations. You know, obviously, do we have an off day, mutual off day? How many days in a row are we playing? There's CBA rule. There are a lot of things. But I just wanted to make sure people didn't have, I think people had the idea that like Matt Quatraro and John Schneider are like feuding and trying to figure out how. No, it's the umpires and Major League Baseball that make the call. And you know, I think John really did sum it up. All you have to look at, what was the last play of that game made? That was the throw Vladdy made, or Bo made, from a lake. You allowed that to happen.
Yeah.
We all saw the field 3 hours and 38 minutes later.
Yeah, didn't look at one.
And I'm no gardener, but I'll tell you what. sure as hell didn't see a lake out there.
You got to remember, too, on top of it, the last four games against that team, John's team had scored 10 runs. Five of those were in one game. So, there's some tension around that team where – you know, you're trying to win as many games, and when it's 2-1, I mean, Kansas City's a decent team, but you would think you have some better at-bats, somebody runs into one, you can gain some confidence, especially who you're about to face.
What would really
the Dodgers is not an easy get.
Yeah, what would really annoy me, I guess, is the fact that they played three innings in a downpour. I would almost rather you just not start the game so I can adjust my pitching accordingly, maybe give my Barrios an extra, whatever. That's where I would, have an issue with that. But anyhow, I wanted to clear that up.
It's a good question. You asked him, let him clear it up.
Yeah. And you know he wanted to clear it up. He was chapped yesterday. I don't blame him. I would be too.
Yeah, there's some challenges around that team right now.
Stan Kasten is president and CEO of the Los Angeles Dodgers. You may have heard that Shohei Ohtani is in town with the Dodgers tonight.
I haven't heard that.
You hadn't heard that?
No.
What's life been like with Shohei Ohtani?
Ooh.
It's been a little more complicated, I think, than the Dodgers may have originally thought it would be. But my guess is they're okay with the way it's turned out so far. We'll talk to Stan Kasten about that. It's Blair and Barker for a Friday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to Blair and Barker, the final half hour of the week. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk tonight following the Jays game. Yeah, baby. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk following the first of three between the Jays and the Dodgers. The Jays lineup is out. Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Jansen, Addison, Barger in left field. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Kevin Biggio, Chris Bassett on the mound for the Blue Jays. Gavin Stone taking the hill for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the Jays are 13-13. Going into this 7:07 first pitch, first to three against Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers. And again, a reminder: we'll be doing Blue Jays talk following the game.
Mm-mm.
What you're looking at me and you're kind of shaking your head. Stan Kasten is we are by the way. Stan Kasten is president and CEO of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He joins us now on Blair and Barker. Stan, good to talk to you. It's been a while. Thank you.
Good to talk to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks very much for doing this. Hey, I was telling Barker that it's like every day, or it seems like I guess it's every Thursday or Friday. I get we call it a tweet, whatever it is now on X, from Bill Shaken, who covers the Dodgers, and it seems like there's another Japanese corporation that's signing a 5-year contract with the Dodgers. I mean, I think we understood there's a baseball aspect to signing Shohei and a business aspect as well. But I'm not asking you to give us a state secret here, but at the end of the day, how much extra financial return is there for you guys from having Shohei on the team? Because it seems significant.
Well, Jeff, you actually are asking for a state secret there. So I'll just tell you, it is is significantly more than we anticipated.
Really?
Because we knew what the records were. We knew what other teams had done, could do. But the combination of the Dodgers' brand, particularly in the Far East, combined with Shohei's global profile, has, I think, exceeded any of our expectations. It's worked out, obviously, well for the Dodgers. But it's good for Major League Baseball, too, because they control marketing rights for all teams for the league globally. And I think they're doing very well also.
Stan, you've been up close and personal with Ohtani. Is there something with his, the way he goes about his every single day that you didn't know that now you know, and you're like, now I know why this dude's really good?
I'll tell you what none of us knew. He actually likes doing media. He actually likes talking to us. And his English is way better than we thought about. And all of that changed once all the revelations about his former translator / manager came out. He's a very much different guy personally. He's still extremely friendly, pleasant, thoughtful around all of us, but he's much more open, even with fans and even with media, than he ever was before. So I think a lot of that was just through the filter of the translator, kind of keeping him away from as many people as possible, because it might have worked for the other guy's motivation. But Shohei has been a tremendous teammate. Of course, he always was. We remember his leadership during the Classic last year, mm-hmm. the World Baseball Classic. And he has fit in perfectly. What makes him great is, I think, this is all he thinks about, Kevin.
Yeah.
This is all he does. Now, we know guys like that, and they can't perform at this level. But when you combine his physical aptitudes, his skills, with the dedication that he has, that's a powerful combination. And we haven't even seen him pitch yet.
No.
You mean on top of all this, he pitches? Holy smokes.
Hmm.
So, it has been a dream. We had three rocky weeks in there, but other than that, it has really been a dream for us.
Yes, Stan, you talked about that, and I'm wondering, is there a wider lesson here, not just for the Dodgers, but for baseball in general, in how these revelations came about? I'm thinking in terms of due diligence and things like that. Is it maybe a cautionary tale for organizations going forward?
You know, I think we have the proper procedures in place. Let's remember, this person worked in Major League Baseball for the last six
yeah.
years. And when he came here, it was an absolute non-negotiable element that he had to be included in. So that was fine with us. We saw no reason to doubt it. We do have background checks on employees. And so, there's only a limited number of things it can uncover. It wouldn't have uncovered any of these things. And I think this situation is so unique. I can't imagine ever happening again where one person could be in the middle just because of a language barrier, being able to control the narrative in both directions. I just can't see it happening again. But I do want to say one thing, because I keep seeing it referred to as a gambling scandal, and that might be what you're thinking about. We certainly are concerned about gambling, but this was not a gambling scandal. This was a garden variety swindle. And we see these all the time with athletes, with entertainers, with famous people, and just rich people. We see people all the time getting swindled by agents or accountants or uncles or brother-in-laws or whatnot. Now, what the swindler did with the ill-gotten gains, yeah, he gambled. It may have been a gambling problem for him, but it wasn't as it relates to Ohtani. And I think that's an important distinction we should really keep in mind.
Stan, alpha males, how as an organization do you handle that? You got three Hall of Famers in a row in a lineup. I mean, Betts and Freeman, pretty good players, and you stick Ohtani in the middle of that. Like, I've been around some alpha males, but not like that. Like, that's something serious. How hard is that? Has it been hard? I mean, they're really good people, it sounds like, but is there any, thing that you have to work through, conversations that you would have to have with those three that you don't have to have with others? How's that been?
I think, I think, first of all, these people are Hall of Famers because of their athletic abilities, because of what they do on the field. But I don't think they could be as successful as they've been if they weren't also world-class people. You can't get a friendlier guy than Freddie Freeman.
Yep.
You can't get a more happy-go-lucky guy than Mookie Betts. And Shohei feels he's the lucky one to be here. So that's unique, all right? That's unique to have those personalities. I've been with, you know, great players. I'm thinking of Atlanta. Great people, Glavine, Maddux, Smoltz, but they loved competing with each other. They loved it, and they got great results of it. And so you didn't need to talk to them either, just like we don't need to talk to these guys. But I tell you what's instructive. As the swindle was unfolding, the first thing that Shohei did when he got back to this country was he assembled a group of his players, including all the players you just mentioned, and sat down with them and talked with them and told them face-to-face what was going on. So it was his instinct to join the club by being open with the rest of the club. And so, you know, I can't take a lot of credit for that. I think all the credit goes to these individuals who just are built that way, and we're very lucky that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Stan, you've spent a lot of time around great baseball players in different organizations, great basketball players, hockey as well. When we talk about Mookie Betts and, you know, the manner in which he has changed positions, which is something, you know, when we talk about Hall of Fame, a lot of Hall of Famers, just they're not interested in changing positions. I don't think we make a big enough deal out of the fact that, you know, Mookie Betts is back playing shortstop. I mean, I remember when Troy Gloss was here, the Jays had an injury crisis, and Troy Gloss moved from third base to shortstop. He hadn't played shortstop since college. And I remember just thinking, this is a very proud guy, making a lot of money, won some awards. He doesn't want to be put in a position where he's probably not as his skills aren't going to show through. But, like, Mookie just seems to – doesn't seem to matter. He just seems happy to go about doing it.
Well, that's the truth. And, you know, for the last couple of years, he has always taken infield on the dirt. He just always loved it, wanted to keep his hand in it. Now, all of us have seen as careers wind down, players go from the center field to a corner outfield to first base. We've seen that. We never see outfielders go to shortstop, right? First, second base, and then to shortstop. It's just it's unique, and he's unique. And that's why I'm comfortable calling him a Hall of Famer already. But it's the physical skills as well as the attitude that he brings to the park every day. I can't compare him to anybody else also. Because what he's doing, I don't think there's a lot of analogs for. He's just been amazing.
Stan, with the coaches, how do you evaluate coaches with a team that has this much talent?
That's a good question. if we win the World Series, I say they all did a good job.
Okay. Yeah.
No, but look, with us, it's all about the effort and the preparation. We really put a high premium on that. Every single person in this locker room, especially the coaches, is dedicated to that, is dedicated to using all the tools that we provide, whether it's the latest in technology, whether it's the latest in brain health or medical health. And then preparation, not cutting corners. And the people that we have enough skill and experience at what they do that if they're using all the tools we give them and not cutting corners, they're going to be successful. And so that's what we look at. And I can say that's why we have such little turnover among our coaches, because they are all built away using all the tools that they give us, that we can give them, being curious to see what is new around the corner, because we're always looking at that. This year, we opened up a new performance center in spring training. Did we need it? I don't know if we did, but it's something that would help us gain an edge, so we went there. And then just working hard. And I can say that is a consistent theme through all of our coaches and our manager.
In conversation with Stan Kasten on Blair and Barker, you know, all through last season, we were talking about Shohei Ohtani being a unicorn, obviously being able to pitch and hit. And one of the questions that we kind of bounced around, and a lot of, indeed, everybody in baseball did, was How the hell do you put a dollar figure on this guy as a baseball player? And I'm just talking about as a baseball player right now. How did you guys start that process, Stantley? How did you say, this is what he is? Because, you know, we all know about war and all this stuff and $8 million per war, et cetera. But how do you evaluate a unicorn?
Well, remember at the time we said he was a unicorn that was missing one half of his arsenal.
Well, that's true, so, yes.
But we factored all of that. And we also look at aging curves because we knew this was going to be a very long agreement. So we have to try to project what values would be stretched out over 10 years. And did we get it right? I don't know. Did we pay too much or too little? I don't know. I know we're very happy with what we've seen so far. But, you know, Jeff, it's a 10-year deal. So give it time to see if it was too much or too little.
Yeah.
We did the best we could, taking in all of the factors. But as you said, it's a unicorn. The only thing that compares to it in the history of baseball is Babe Ruth, and that wasn't a terribly useful comparison for salaries. So we go with what people are making now. We go with what we think we can do to monetize making the team be better. As you know, typically when you add a player to your team, you're trying to evaluate how he can make your team better, how it can perform better. What is that worth to you in dollars and all the ways that it could have an impact? Here is a different thing because Shohei is one of those very, very rare athletes who actually moves the needle economically by himself, actually sells tickets by himself. People talk about that, but players don't really do that. Players sell tickets by virtue of their contribution to making the team better. Shohei has that element plus the additional personal element. And as you said, it's hard to quantify that, but we got to a place that we thought we would be comfortable with. Now, the unique character of this contract also played a very big part in allowing us to figure out how far we could stretch. But we knew right away this was going to work for us, and that's exactly how it has played out so far.
Stan, whenever you hear people say it's World Series or bust for the Dodgers, you think that's fair?
I think it's that way with us every year, Kevin. We're the Dodgers.
Yep.
All right? And I've said this from the day I got here. I can't in my other place in Atlanta and Washington, I was able to say, guys, we're building from ground zero. It's going to take us 5 years. Hang with us while we grow. I couldn't say that here because this fan base has supported this franchise for 60 years. They demanded and deserve a team that could compete now, and that's how we felt when we came into the Dodgers. We are the Dodgers. Our history, our legacy, our fan base kind of demands that we compete or contend every year. So we need to get the postseason every year. What happens in the postseason, as you know, is subject to the vicissitudes, okay, of who's hot, who's healthy, who's injured, who gets lucky. And short series, anything can happen. So I don't know about guaranteeing winning World Series. That's never really doable. But contending every year, yeah, I think that's what we demand of ourselves. So fair or not fair, I accept that because we've all been with teams that had no expectations.
Mm-hmm.
This is better. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
Stan, really good of you to join us. We know your time is
awesome.
Valuable. It's great insight as always, my friend. Be well.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
See ya.
Stan Kasten's president and CEO of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
No pressure, but you better win. That's basically what he said.
You know, Stan's, I mean, he's been around great athletes, hockey players, baseball players, basketball players. Interesting hearing him talk about Shohei Ohtani. And I think you see why this ownership group would have been so interested in getting Shohei Ohtani in here. You know, people kind of roll their eyes at the dollar figure, but I do a little digging and find out, and Stan's not going to, I didn't expect him to give us the exact numbers, but find out just how much some of the Japanese corporate sponsorships that the Dodgers have earned in the last month. Find out how much they're making off that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had someone who's got way more experience with these big contracts than I do tell me that he said, by the end of that contract, he said, honestly, even if Shohei doesn't play for the last 2 years of that deal or is hurt or something, he said, that deal will pay for itself.
Yeah.
As a really guy said, there's no doubt about it. That mm-hmm. deal will pay for itself. And Stan is right. You know, we always have this discussion about individual players and do individual players sell tickets. And I've always been look, I've covered teams. I saw Pedro Martinez win a Cy Young Award. There wasn't really a noticeable bump in games that he pitched
yeah.
when Roy Halladay was here. Sometimes there was a bump, sometimes there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Winning teams put people in the stands. It's great when you have a winning, like 2015 Jays, when you had a bunch of guys that everybody loved and
mm-hmm.
guys who were, you know, saved their careers and great stories and all that. It's great when you have a team with a lot of texture and a lot of characters.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, people go to the ballpark to watch teams win and go to the playoffs. And Ohtani's the only, I can't think of another baseball player. Maybe Barry Bonds when he had that pursuit. But I don't know how many other players in my lifetime were guaranteed to sell tickets.
Yeah.
Right? Shohei Ohtani comes to town. There are people who will go because Shohei Ohtani's coming.
Nope,
I don't care
no
who
question.
He's. Like,
yeah.
He could have been with the Brewers. No disrespect to the Brewers.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani comes to town. People are going to go see Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anybody like that.
No.
In baseball, Kevin. I mean, I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
He's not even the best player on their team, Jeff.
Well, that's.
How about that? Now you just say that out loud.
Yeah.
He's not the best player. In my mind, he's not. The dude hitting in front of him is better. And Stan was talking about that. I think it's not so much going from right field to shortstop. I think it's going from one side of the field to the other.
But you know the
just
thing,
the angles.
But I think the thing Stan was getting at, guys make the other move in their careers. Guys will go from the infield to the outfield.
Further away from the ball.
Exactly. The older
right?
you get,
why do
you think
they put Barger in left?
Well,
then far away from the ball.
No, but I mean, late yeah. in players' careers, you will see a guy move from shortstop to another. To go from outfield
it's crazy.
To shortstop.
Because it makes your team better. Not because they're trying to hide you. That's crazy stuff. And he wants to do it. Right,
and he did it at a time. Now, think about the start of the year. They had a lot of issues at second base with Gavin Lux.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just can't say enough about that, man. When a guy,
Dodgers.
And yes, he's getting a lot of money. I get all that, but I keep thinking back to this Troy Gloss thing, and I just remember prideful guys. Troy Gloss has been in the majors for years,
yeah.
and he's playing shortstop, and he.
Well, you don't want to look silly either, right?
No.
No, you don't.
Of course you don't.
No.
And
you can look silly.
And
quick.
I remember telling people, I think it was 10 games in a row he played during injury, shortstop. And I remember saying, I went up to him after like one game, and I just want to let you know, for what it's worth, that's pretty freaking impressive. You know, he said, hey.
I played with him when he played short a couple of times, and I think that was the part of his career where I should have been playing short instead of him.
Buddy, hey.
All right, I'm going to tell you straight up.
But
that's a fact.
But he was out there, man.
I guess. I mean, Gibby put me in right, too. That's how you
well, Gibby
tonight.
Was. That, now, that was one of those years where Gibby was making it up. Shall we say he was making it up as he went along?
Yeah, he was guessing. Yeah, he was putting some names in a hat.
That was before Gibby was the genius he was.
I couldn't go wrong.
That was before Gibby was the genius that had Jose Bautista and Josh Donaldson. And I'm not taking anything away from him.
No,
I'm just saying that.
Greatest manager in the Jays history.
I mean, I think he's...
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
I think he was... when he came back the second time, I remember writing, I thought he was the most underrated manager in Jays history. I like the way Gibby ran a bullpen, and I have always said that I judge a manager like that. But... Yeah.
Never apologize when you're right.
There are like so many Gibby-isms.
Oh, boy.
Never apologize when you're
I've
right.
I've heard some good
suck
ones.
On that one for tonight, will you?
Yeah, that one I...
You were there probably? You're probably the one that asked the
suck
question.
Suck on that one for a night? No, I wasn't there for suck on that one for a night.
I've heard some good ones.
No, I was, well, it was on our show. He said, why don't you just not worry about it?
Yeah.
I remember that one. But anyhow, we appreciate Stan Kasten.
That was great.
Look, it's going to be a lot of fun this weekend down at the ballpark. Shohei Ohtani's in town. It's going to be fun. It's a big deal, man. It's a big deal. We're going to be doing Blue Jays talk following the game tonight.
I think it'd be a big deal if the Jays win a couple of those.
There's a lot of people in the city right now telling sports fans how they should act. They should be noisy.
Oh, don't listen to that.
I'm just telling you, go down and have fun. Go down and have fun. If you want
to
boo his ass, boo his ass.
Who cares?
Go for it.
Yeah.
But if you want to just sit and enjoy it,
sure.
Sit and enjoy it. You pay your money, you can do what you want. Anyhow,
we'll be doing Blue Jays talk.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate. Available now.